Unfortunately, for those who are going to make a presentation, I won't be as lenient as I was in the first three presentations because honorable members also got other engagements after this meeting of the committee. The next presenter, and because we have had a lengthy discussion with this one, I hope you summarized with input. South African Association of Fights, COAF, SAAFF. You want to make the presentation from the back?
Excuse me, Chair?
Okay.
That's fine. I'm quite happy here. I'm only introducing the association.
Okay. Who's the presenter? Okay, you want to lead from the back. Okay, fine. All right.
Good.
Forward ever, backward never.
Good morning. Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Committee Members, on behalf of the South African Association of Freight Forwarders and the South African logistics industry in general, thank you for the opportunity to make representation again today. Given the time constraints, I would like to briefly introduce our team who have worked tirelessly on the custom bills over the past 3 years, and more recently the past 7 months to achieve what we are able to present to you today. There are Mrs. Janisa Marie, unfortunately she's not here with us today, Ms. Sue Wood, Mr. Johan Marais, Mr. John White, Mr. Curry Desapia, and Mr. Dave Perrimal, who is representing the South African Express Parcel Association. We also have our Vice Chairman sitting on my right, Mr. Wack Bowen, and a number of our members present, seven to my right and one to my left, who obviously have a vested interest in the outcome of this meeting. I would personally also like to thank the South African Revenue Service, Chief Operations Officer, Mr. Barry Hall, and the Executive Legal and Policy, Mr. Kosi Lowe, and his executives and senior management for the discussions and collaboration that took place as recently as last week that led to agreement on a number of the clauses of the control bill with which we had major concerns. Our presentation, as mentioned previously, will be tabled by Ms. Lucia Subin of Bowman Gilfillan. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning to the Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Committee members. It's in a better spirit that we meet with you this morning since our last meeting, because a lot has happened since then. And in fact, the term trade facilitation couldn't actually be more relevant because on the 26th of January was International Customs Day. And even at an international level, there's been a lot of emphasis on simplification, modernization, transparency, and predictability for traders in the supply chain. With that in mind, it's been 57 working days since we last met, and you as a committee have given us these 57 working days. You've given us this extension for us to make submissions and representations. And as recently as the 22nd of January 2014, excellent progress has been made, certainly between SAF in consultation with SARS. There's been a lot of collaboration between industry and the South African Revenue Service. And this has resulted in us addressing the issues in question to the satisfaction, I'm happy to say, to the satisfaction of both parties. And to this end, we would like to express our appreciation to SARS for their concerted efforts and flexibility in coming to these resolutions and conclusions that we'd like to present today. And that, ladies and gentlemen, was the reason for that request, and we've utilized that time quite to the benefit of both parties. But I think if I put myself in the position of the committee, in order for us to move forward, it's imperative that we understand one another, the lingo, and for the committee to understand what the 1964 position was, or is rather, because that's the current legislation, and what the impact is of the suggestions in the bills as they stand. So I'm going to hand you over to my colleague, Johan Marais, who's going to explain in very simple terms what the 1964 Act position is, what is the difference that has been proposed by SARS and that has been agreed to by SARS, and then I will continue from there.
Honourable Chair and committee members, the current Act of 1964 was also written in a diversified language, which was difficult to understand at times because it always referred to some Latin expressions, and it was difficult to understand how to relate those in plain language. We're happy to say that the customs bills are written in plain language to be understood and to be easy to read. In terms of the existing Section 18, it has always provided that a clearance declaration had to be made. And to call it a clearance declaration, it is merely, in the existing and prior to modernization, a paper format of preparing a set of information which was introduced to a customs office and it was acted on. This Section 18 contains a progressive clause which says that SARS Customs will deem a particular document to be a customs declaration. So in the current environment, there has always been the concept of a customs declaration. It has never been that goods moved uncontrolled within the borders of South Africa. That clause currently, and if you want to have it by word, it says it is a deemed customs clearance. So that is the premise on which SARF has built the negotiations with SARS Customs in interpreting what is meant by the provisions in the current bills as they stand. And the bills in themselves require that a declaration of sorts must be made. Whether that be in the terminology or the language of the industry of either being a customs declaration or a bill of entry, at this stage with modernization, we accept it is going to be information. And how that information is introduced and the timing of that information to the customs for them to do an assessment is what we are striving to achieve within the bills. And I will leave it to my colleague Verusha to continue, especially with reference to the options that were offered by SARS in terms of accommodating the inland movement or the controlled inland movement of containers.
So, Honourable Committee, I think to simplify it, after our discussions in November, there were two options that were put forward by SARS. Option one, as I remember it, to be the one where information is passed to SARS in advance, and the second option would be where there was this option of an alternative or the current Section 18 to remain. Now, in terms of what has been agreed to between SARF and SARS, there is agreement on the option one, just to clarify the understanding between us and SARS and the committee, and for simplifying your understanding on where we've come to in our talks with SARS. So option one, where there would be a information provided to SARS in advance, and we can provide you with more information on that, and that information would be provided electronically, that has been agreed to with SARS. And this would be included in an addendum that will be provided to you in relation to what we've agreed with SARS. What we must state that there is agreement on these issues in general, but there are some instances where there might be teething problems that will be developed and tested over time as these new regulations and rules get rolled out. And in light of the good working relationship that we have established with SARS, we have high expectations of the future outcomes and future collaboration with SARS. A team of industry experts have studied and analyzed the control bill in particular. There's been extensive interaction with SARS to produce a 63-page document which was given to you and submitted in December of last year. This document, of which you have a copy, addresses the practicalities in the supply chain. And on this journey with SARS, we've committed to ongoing continuous consultation in respect of the three main areas that we advanced in November of last year. The first one being the penalties, the second one being the process of clearance at first port of entry, and the third one being the rules. Now, a record of sort of an agreement has been reached with SARS. A meeting was held especially on the 22nd of January of this year, and it was agreed that in the event of any unintended consequences that may hamper the flow of legitimate trade, that this would be addressed in further consultation with SARS. A transition period of 1 year was agreed to between SARS and trade to resolve any teething problems, any anomalies that may occur down the road, and that is specifically in relation to the aspect of the inland terminals or the whole city deep issue, so to speak. Addressing the proposed penalties, this has been one of the key issues for industry, and in our discussions and deliberations with SARS, agreement has been reached that it is not SARS's intention to impose fixed amount penalties provided for in the current clause 876 in relation of bona fide errors where there is no revenue prejudice to the state, and various categories of fixed amount penalties in clause 876 are still to be negotiated with SARS. To enable an effective and efficient supply chain requires provision of a full set of data elements to enable SARS in order to conduct their risk assessment, as they rightly should. Removals in transit to some landlocked or SACU or SADC countries have yet to be fully resolved with SARS. Containerized groupage cargo managed by co-loaders, where a container holds cargo for a number of different importers, still remains an area for which a workable solution must still be found, and that SARS and SAF will work together in further collaboration over time. The practical implications of the control bill on an uninterrupted supply chain does require further deliberation. The 63-page working document that was submitted to SARS with a view to assisting in the construction of the rules is at your disposal. To this end, we look forward to further consultation and collaboration with SARS in drafting and reviewing and assisting in the practicalities around the rules. We, as SARS, cannot allow illicit trade to interrupt the seamless flow of legitimate trade, thereby reducing our own competitive position in the world. The collaboration between SARS and industry has allowed huge strides to be made in providing adequate fiscal control and a safe and secure marketplace for all. This collaboration bodes well for the future of South Africa in light of rapid changes taking place, as demonstrated in this addendum that we have agreed to, this agreement with SARS. We'd like to conclude with a quote from our country's most celebrated son, which is that no single person can liberate a country. You can only liberate a country if you act as a collective, Nelson Mandela. So unless there are any further questions, that is our position. The addendum, the agreed terms between SARS and SARS will be provided.
Thank you very much. It was short and precise. It does indicate that there has been some interaction, extensive interaction between yourselves and SARS. Can we have the chamber? Johannesburg Chamber of Commerce. Can we be at one? There are too many voices and too many messages.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to come back and take this matter further. And I'd also like to sincerely thank Alan Wickham for his tremendous cooperation and the courteous way and most obliging way that he's interacted with us, and I really appreciate it. It's made our life very much easier. And I want to just emphasize that I'm not an academic, so you shouldn't have any difficulty in understanding what I'm talking about. I think that, as you know, in the written submission we made, we introduced the Chamber. We've been around for many, many years. We've been involved, we are very much involved at municipal levels, at a provincial level, nationally and, of course, internationally. And we're very much part of the International Chamber of Commerce, and especially in this particular issue concerning inland ports. This particular subject is critical. I can't use a lesser word. It is a critical issue because the extensive unintended consequences are very, very serious. But let me move on here to say that we have already commented on SARS presentation on the 5th of November, and I also want to say that we do have, whilst we do agree, disagree on a number of issues, we certainly do have cordial relations with SARS. I'd just like to move then on to the what I call the unresolved matters. And the first one is that we are very concerned about is the South African Customs Union. And we interact quite extensively with the Customs Union and with the Secretariat. And the Customs are quite right when they say there's been extensive consultation with the Customs Union members. But of course, as we all know, there is no mention in the bill of inland ports at all. And when we talk to the Customs Union and draw them their attention, we say we're surprised at Botswana and Lesotho and all of you in the Customs Union, three of you of course being landlocked, are saying that we are happy to have our inland ports closed down. And they say, but we don't know what you're talking about. And so of course this is where the particular issue has come about. And I might add that since 2007, SALCU have had interaction with the World Customs Organization on the development program, the objective to improve the economy and seamless trade facilitation. So these developments have been going on for quite a long time. Our minister, of course, Mr. Davis, his whole objective is how to advance economic development and business integration into the customs union. As you know, at the moment, the customs union only function is to agree on tariffs and take a substantial share of our customs revenue. Let me move on here. If we look at the big issue with customs, a big disagreement boils down to where is the border for South Africa? And I think this is where the big, if anybody wants to get legal advice on anything, let's get it on this particular issue. Because as far as we are concerned, from the International Chamber's point of view, from Johannesburg Chamber's point of view, the border will be the coast. If any intervention is required at the border, the coastal point of arrival of the vessels, that to us constitutes the border. And the minute that the border is moved to the coast, that's where the international trade will change hands. Don't let us have any doubt about that. I can talk to you in terms of Incoterms, which you're getting a bit sick of, but every Incoterm, with the exception of a delivered duty paid, actually terminates at the customs point. And our question, very simply, is where is the customs point? Now, customs are trying to say, as long as the importer makes a declaration, the goods can move inland. We are saying the mere fact that an intervention is required from the importer means that is the border. And in international trading terms, the exporter does not, and I've said this before, does not take on any obligation to pass goods or be online to get past the customs border. That's where the importer takes over, and customs have demonstrated that the importer must make a declaration. So this really is the major sticking point that we have with the customs. Where is the border? I come back to the point. If a customs intervention is required before a box, a container, can move out of the coastal area, that, in our book, is the customs border. So this is where we're coming from. And the effect of this will mean that customs will not be the ones releasing the box from the coast. the shipping line will be the one releasing the box from the coast. So the boxes will all sit in the port until released by customs. Whatever that form of release takes, doesn't matter. But there will be no seamless, uninterrupted, is the word. Perhaps seamless is a little too soft. Uninterrupted transit is the word. And as Mr. Gurkha said, we have to come back to the concept that at present the ship docks in Gaborone, in Botswana, it docks in City Deep, it docks in another four or five inland ports in South Africa, in Pretcon, in Pretoria. That facility will be withdrawn. And whatever the shipping lines say, I can say without fear of a contradiction, the manifest will terminate at the coast and everything will be reconsigned. Now, this, and of course, what one's got to understand is that once the boxes stop at the port, and a lot of them then will be, for one reason or the other, because they have to be released by the shipping line, the bills of lading in many instances have to be presented, that will mean that there will be more boxes moved out of the port by the already massively congested gateway into the depots in the area, as Anacleet, and I can give you information without fear of contradiction that once a box moves out of the port area, it never goes back to be railed. And once there is an intervention in the coast, there will be very much less boxes moving by rail. And I say that against the situation where the railways are spending 14 billion, not million, 14 billion on the equipment on that corridor. And they've spent 3 or 4 billion on upgrading the port, the terminal in City Deep, to up the number of boxes by 300 or 400%. So this is the sort of issues we're seeing. In my 2013 presentation, I gave you, I went into great detail on the unintended consequences of this bill, so I don't need to go through that again. But let me just move on. Now, since our last meeting, by the way, just let me go back a second, there was a discussion on the two options, the question was raised on the two options from SARS. Either option that SARS have issued requires an intervention from the importer. So we are not, from our point of view, we're not discussing option one, we're not discussing option two, because the effect of both options is to mean that the box will not remove will not move until a declaration has been made by the importer. That is the issue. So, from our book, there's no question about option one and option two. I do respect what the forwarding agents are saying. I think the forwarding agents are saying, look, if this bill goes through, we're going to have to pick up the pieces. So let's see if we can mitigate the damage and come up with a workable facilitation. But as has been said, we're hoping that this serious issue of the inland movement will be addressed at a later stage. We are saying, without any fear of contradiction from the users of the facilities, we do have common membership with SARS membership as well, through our Chamber of Commerce members, but we are talking in terms of traders here as opposed to forwarding agents. And I want to make it very clear that the traders are the ones who are going to have the difficulty if this facility is withdrawn. At the moment, undertaking an international trade transaction on a multimodal document means you get a price from Johannesburg to Chicago, Johannesburg to Munich, wherever. And that facility, that ease of costing, that ease of pricing will disappear. So just moving now, the developments taken place since we sat here last was that in Bali at the beginning of December, you've all heard about the WTO talks that took place in Bali, and they have got very, very meaningful implications for all the members. It was quite, I think the word was used in business circles, euphoria was the word. It was a breakthrough for trade policy, the trade policy community. The whole thrust of the WTO trade facilitation agreement was to reduce logistics costs. And particularly in developing and landlocked countries. I'll come back to our situation in SADC. We have got, in the Customs Union, we have got three landlocked countries. And when it's mentioned here that the Customs Union support this bill, are you telling me that Botswana is saying, please close down our inland port? Swaziland, which is using their inland port as a distribution hub. What's happening in Walvis Bay, the developments are happening in Walvis Bay. But I can tell you that what's happening, we know is from a Chamber of Commerce point of view, the support for trade and logistics in SADC has been switched to COMESA, because COMESA is getting on with the job. That's what we are experiencing when we talk about fear of contradiction. So we have these difficulties that we are facing here. But this WTO trade facilitation agreement is going to be, the object, as you can see, is to address the high transaction cost in developed and landlocked countries. It's easing border controls to allow transit movements under customs bond. And of course, the focus is on SMEs and landlocked development countries because of the high logistical costs which limit their trade, their investment potential, and their obviously employment opportunities. I'm just looking at a couple of comments from the forward article on this document, because as I mentioned at the end there, agreement will be binding. That means on South Africa, on all the 159 WTO member states. Now, when this document is invoked, now brought into agreement, which is very shortly, then we will be signatories to this agreement. And it calls for, in two of the articles here, Article 9, Article 11, Article 9 is a movement of goods under customs control, not under declaration from importers. Under customs control intended for import. And Article 11 talks about freedom of transit. And these are two articles that we are reversing in South Africa if this bill is passed in that particular form. And if we then have a situation, we wake up one morning, we've now signed this trade facilitation agreement, kicks in, then those parts of the bill will have to be changed. But see, the whole business is very much in part of this WTO trade agreement, and it's important that business understands what the agreement provides for, how the implementation process can be influenced. It goes on to say that obviously these border controls for business, how business can ensure its voice is heard in the way governments implement and its business. Now, this is the World Trade Organization talking, this is not me talking. So I want to just highlight that it's critical we understand how this WTO bill is. If anybody wants to see the WTO agreement, I'm happy to let them have it. And also this UNCTAD newsletter for this last quarter in 2013 covers this issue particularly well. Just let me move on here. On the conclusion, and I can't emphasize sufficiently the unintended consequences of the inland port removal on traders, on Transnet particularly. I know Transnet have at this late stage woken up and they're having a look at how this is going to impact on the corridor from Durban. And and I can tell them without them having any further study, it's going to move less. There are going to be less rail movements, and I can tell you that Transnet's facilities are very restricted, very limited. In fact, they've done half their job of closing down the inland ports anyway, because those people who want to rail through, which is the cheapest option, aren't able to get their facilities from Transnet. Not 20% of the boxes that come through for the inland ports are moved by rail. When we started with the inland ports in 1977, 60% moved by rail. And what's happened progressively, there's been less and less investment by Transnet in the corridor, there's been 10% growth in containers every year, and then everybody said we must move goods from road to rail. Everybody. Sandrock, everybody. We must move. How? The railways cannot handle it. On two occasions, I've been told overseas, don't manifest inland because you cannot, you will lose your box for 2 weeks. This is one of the big problems Botswana have, the high cost of their logistics. Why? Because they can't rely on the rail corridor. They've got a dedicated line through to Gaborone. But the delays, when that box hits the ground, and we've even discussed this with freight rail. I know this is not your issue, but it's part and parcel of the problem that we have. Freight rail is the same. We don't know how long the box is in the port before it's given to us to bring up to Johannesburg. But these are the issues that we live in. So we're talking now that the road movements will increase, port congestion will increase, and berthing delays will increase. Now, there's a formula laid down by the shipping line. If there's more than 48 hours delay over a certain period, 2 or 3 weeks, then import surcharges, congestion surcharges will be raised. And we are telling you now that that will happen. If this seamless movement through the coast, which we should be growing, which we should be encouraging, if that is stopped, you see. And this is a retrogressive step, totally in conflict with not just the WTA agent's recommendation, but everybody. We work at ICC level. We work with the World Customs Organization. I mentioned this in October 2013. And we have a joint committee going to promote internationally an understanding and the development of the inland port, purely to take the pressure off the coastal ports, because it's much quicker to move the boxes out of the port than have them sitting in the port, have to provide additional facilities. And you must remember, when the boxes sit in the port, it means the ships sit outside the port. So this is where we're coming from. And I would just like to continue here just to say quickly that the inland ports are proven to stimulate inland investment and economic activity, which of course is employment. And we have not seen any substantial evidence produced to motivate the removal after 37 years. 37 years we've had this system going to justify. And I honestly think it's because customs do not fully appreciate the unintended consequences. They also, at the same time, in meetings with them, acknowledge their obligation to balance control with trade facilitation. One of the Kyoto core principles is there must be a 50-50 between facilitation and security, you see. So we sincerely believe, without any doubt, that the status quo should be maintained. And with that, I really sincerely thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Corbett. Thank you very much.
Good. Busa. Introduce yourself and the team that you lead. I see Prof is not here today. Okay, good.
Good morning, Chair, honourable members of the committee. I'm Lorraine Lotta, who advises Boofa on various matters. I have also with me Lee Padiachi of our parliamentary office and Deirdre Penfold from the chemical industry. Chair, I come here today to offer you a high-level perspective. I'm sure that you all know Business Unity South Africa. You may not have seen me, but you've seen Prof many times, so you know who we are. What we want to discuss with you today is the risks of taking a hard and fast position when there isn't common ground. We have common ground, I think, that the bill as currently drafted results in gives effect, I would say, probably, to a radical policy shift. Ports like City Deep, inland ports like City Deep, currently designated as inland ports for customs purposes, will no longer be so designated. We understand the absolute imperative to address customs fraud and illicit trade, and we believe that this is basis for this shift. We are in no way saying that we must not address the scourge. It is a scourge on our economy, and we have to address it, and we are constantly seeking ways as business that we can work in stronger partnership with SARS to make effective interventions. We're not at all sure, though, that this policy shift is going to achieve that. From our point of view, even if we're wrong in what we think, it's still a risk that there's going to be a negative impact on trade, and we think we need to be very careful in making a decision that would have such an effect. I want to briefly show you for the record, Chair, I'm quite sure this committee is well aware of this, but if you look at the graph, particularly at the bottom of the graph, you see the poor performance, ongoing poor performance of manufacturing and mining in particular. Their contribution to the GDP continues to shrink, something which is a concern to everybody. And we also see the trade trends where you see at the end of the graph the increasing trade deficit. Given that environment in which we find ourselves, we have to be very, very careful about making an intervention that would give us a challenge in this area. It's important to recognize the engagement that we've had with SARS, and these engagements have not at all been acrimonious. We haven't been able to reach common ground. We recognize the efforts by SARS to try to address our problems. However, we're not at all sure that they are going to be sufficient to really address our concerns. And let's just consider how these concerns are made up. If we look at the trade deficit that we already have, we look at the poor economic performance, we look at the significant role that the logistics value chain plays in an economy, we see where we sit in world terms in that area, then we have to consider whether to at this time particularly, to make this policy shift categorically, entrench it in the law without any further consideration, whether that would be the right thing to do. We recognize, of course, that SARS is not alone in the logistics value chain. There are a number of other players. So whatever problems we may have with the logistics value chain, SARS is not the only one that contributes to that. So if we see where we are, you've heard from others, the relationship between the exporter and the importer and the situation of where the obligations of the exporter are passed to the obligation of the importer. It's a significant change to require the importer to assume obligations before the goods have reached their final destination. That's really where we stand. The other question that we're asking is how this would affect the special economic zone legislation, which we understand is about to be passed. It provides for licensed custom controlled areas within the SEZ, which may also not be at the first point of entry. So we need to also have clarity on how that will be dealt with. I need to be honest that we and SARS have a different interpretation of what this Article 9 in the World Trade Agreement on Trade Facilitation means. We believe that it buttresses our position, that there should be the seamless movement, that the first port of entry is not necessarily the port of customs clearance. If we don't have agreement on the interpretation, and I think that really when one doesn't have agreement on the meaning of a fundamental document, then one needs to be quite careful how one proceeds. The same, we have examples in the USA where that quite clearly they do not define the first port of entry as necessarily as the port of customs clearance. We believe that the bill as currently drafted is completely inflexible on this matter. So what we'd like to see is a return closer to the status quo, where the provisions that the Commissioner may designate a port other than the first port of entry as a customs port, that should be retained in the bill. So we would like to see that the current provision in this regard in Section 18 be retained. We understand the needs by customs to have additional information, and we believe that could be addressed quite easily by rule. We think one would need to make a definition for inland port. We have some ideas about it, but clearly if you first need to agree the principle that such a port should be defined. We need to have the possibility to designate, as we have now, to have the possibility of designating places of entry and exit as customs ports or ports where customs procedures can be carried out, and why, how you can use a place of entry and exit. We think it would be good to look at that. And then also we need to look at Section 90 so that you're clear what the difference is between where they're offloaded and where they're cleared. We believe, therefore, Chair, in conclusion, that the risk of the radical policy shift of no longer allowing that uninterrupted transport movement of freight from the exporter to the final destination is something that we perhaps don't fully understand the implications. We understand the reasons for the change, but we think that we need to address that. Now, our first prize would be that the bill was not approved before this matter is addressed. But I understand now with the pressure to complete it, the bill may not be entirely feasible, but I think it would be feasible to make some slight amendments to the bill to be able to address our factors. And we hope that you'll be able to do that. Thank you very much for your attention, Chief.
Thank you very much. I think this round of presentations was quite precise and direct, which will help honourable members to interact meaningfully with the submissions. Questions, comments? Honourable Goranov?
Question about proceedings. Have we heard from Fedusa?
Oh, by the way, I did not. I was informed that Fedusa is not here. And as you'll recall, that they made a very extensive submission last time. So, in my view, they did not want to repeat their submission to this committee. So, whatever they presented still stands for consideration by the committee. Over to you, Honorable Goranov.
Thank you, Chairman. Just two questions. One is, any of the presenters, are you aware whether there's any evidence that the inland ports are major contributor to custom fraud? Is there any evidence available to substantiate that claim? And then secondly, I want to ask the lawyers on that side. Is proposal one, or option one, that we've agreed on, killing ports like City Deep to remain a designation inland port? And then finally, to the Chamber of Commerce, why is Transnet not here to support you? Are they ignorant about the fact, or why are Transnet not here?
Second question, comment. Honourable Harris.
Thanks, Chair. I'm trying to understand what must have happened between the freight forwarders and SARS if what they're telling us in the presentation is accurate. The original letter from December, if I read it correctly, suggested that they were unable to find a position on SARS's two options, mainly because they were unable to get answers from the shipping lines, which clearly they then got, and agreed that they could live with option one. Then the issue of penalties actually seemed in the letter from December to be the largely resolved, and now it's actually the last remaining point of contention, as I see it, last major point of contention. Is that a correct analysis of the process that was undertaken between the freight forwarders and SARS? And then, and if so, what were the answers to those three questions that you put to the shipping companies that you were looking for answers from but you hadn't got by December? And then I mean, my understanding of the industry for the Chamber of Commerce is that the freight forwarders act on behalf of the users. So if you are you're arguing that the users will be prejudiced by following option one, which is advanced clearance, but the forwarders are acting on behalf of the users, are they not? So if they are happy why should the committee remain concerned? Because they are the ones that actually handle the clearance issue. So if they're satisfied that advanced clearance preserves the status of the inland port, should that not be enough for this committee? And then I need to also ask Lorraine from Busa. I mean, what do you think of the position of the forwarders that if they go with option one that SARS presented, that will preserve the status of the inland ports and presumably answer most of your concerns? Thanks, Chair.
Okay. In the absence of any other comments or questions, can I hand back to the presenters?
Thank you very much for the questions. On the question of any evidence of fraud at inland ports, you must remember when the boxes come off the vessel, the seal should be checked. Customs have got the option of putting a seal on if they like, and the box should be out of the port onto the rail or whatever the bonded carrier is up to the inland destination, which it would be a secure bonded donation. The alternative is the box sits in the port, possibly goes out of the port into a depot down in the port. But the difference is that in all occasions, the box is under the control of the shipping line, the box is under the control of the bonded operator, and also the container itself is a transport vehicle. So as far as the issue of the security insurance concerns, smuggling has been mentioned, the boxes are secured, they're locked, they're sealed. If it's an intervention on the route, that is an issue with the bonded carrier that can be carried, whether it's Transnet, whoever it is. But we've been living with this situation for 37 years and it hasn't cropped up before. And I can assure you that from the shipping line's point of view, if it was a real problem, they would not get insurance to move those boxes inland. You asked the question why we're not on the same page as SARF. We are on the same page as SARF, but SARF have been, in my book, and they can answer themselves, very pragmatic, and they're saying, look, we've been told by customers whether you like it or not, we're going to push this bill through. So SARF has said, well, hold on, we're the ones who have to handle spin-off, and we're going to be the ones who will handle the whatever situation that we have to handle with the customs requirements. We have to meet the customs requirements. But what we are saying as traders is that the trader will only ship up to the border, and we've established without any doubt, I'm sure, that the border will be the coast. The shipping lines don't enter the scenario really, because the shipping lines take their instruction from the exporter, and the shipping lines always will say, well, we'll do whatever the customer wants, we can do anything. But I can assure you the shipping lines, I mean, at the moment we have an inland port in City Deep. Why don't the shipping lines accept goods for export overseas at City Deep? Because they can't rely on the rail transport. So the actual presence of an inland port doesn't mean that all the shipping lines will utilise it. It's an option that the importer has, it's an option that the shipping line has. And the fact that there's an entry required or a declaration required that they close will totally alter the status of a city, of an inland terminal. Customs have said, we are not going to allow inland ports. We will not allow those points as a point of entry and exit as an international gateway, whether it's a landlocked country, whether it's an inland terminal in South Africa. So the whole status is, in fact, there's no provision in the bill for inland ports, period. So it's not a matter of, oh, well, we're tinkering with the situation by allowing a clearance through the coast.
Chair, I will answer the question on option one. I think it's important to be pragmatic, to find a mutually acceptable solution, but option one, as currently stands, incorporated into the bill, will not preserve the status of a customs port at City Deep or any other inland port. So that's the simple answer. And our position is that to look at that option as being a solution to the concerns we've raised would not be satisfactory to us. So we want to see a much more comprehensive approach, which would give us comfort that the risk that we anticipate here is in fact removed, not mitigated. I should perhaps also say, Chair, that we believe that we need to be taking every effort to combat fraud and illicit trade. It's absolutely essential. But we haven't seen evidence, as in facts and figures, that there's a worse prevalence of it at City Deep than anywhere else. We haven't seen it. It may exist, but we haven't seen it.
Thank you.
I'm going to address the two questions posed by Honourable Kurnoff first. Firstly, is there any evidence that an inland port is a major contributor to fraud? The short answer is no. We haven't undertaken any research. We didn't see the need to because the issues that were raised initially by us in November have since been deliberated on with SARS, and I will take you through that shortly. And the second question, is option one, killing City Deep as an inland port? The short answer to that is that option one has been tweaked along the way, and I'm going to take you through it very carefully. By SARF in its deliberation with SARS, it's been tweaked, and we have taken a very pragmatic view to the approach and in our understanding with SARS as to how this will roll out, on the understanding, of course, that any teething problems will be uncovered will be dealt with over a 12-month period, so it's not an immediate change. So the arrangement as we have it with SARS is as follows. Consensus was reached that City Deep and other similar facilities are not inland ports. The 1964 Act, that is the current law, does not define an inland port. It has become customs parlance and is a way of referring to City Deep over the years as being an inland port. City Deep is a licensed and will be a licensed inland container terminal. There is no need to include a provision in the control bill to provide for inland ports. A customs clearance declaration for a permissible customs procedure will be submitted for containerized cargo consigned for delivery to a licensed inland container terminal or depot. This declaration will inter alia provide full details regarding tariff, value, origin, and the importer or the importer's agent. This declaration must be submitted by at least 3 calendar days before arrival at the first place of entry. So I think the critical words there are at least, so it doesn't have to be 3 days before, but at least it could be a day before or 2 days before. And that is, I think, the important thing for everyone in this room to understand, that there is some, that's the kind of flexibility that we have arranged with in our deliberations with SARS. No penalties will be levied for clearances not submitted 3 days before arrival. Penalties will be levied if the clearance is not submitted within 3 working days of arrival of the goods. So penalties would kick in if the clearance is not submitted after 3 days from the point at which the goods arrive in the Republic. Containers will be provisionally released before arrival of the goods at the first place of entry to allow trade to plan the supply chain. And that is, I think, the critical aspect for SARF acting on behalf of importers, exporters. Those are their clients. The idea being to be able to have sufficient time, resources to be able to plan the supply chain. The provisional release as contemplated in the current Clause 90 sub 4 of the bill, the control bill, will be interpreted by SARS as an electronic message and will include information regarding the relevant terminal or depot to which the goods may be removed. This will provide certainty and predictability to role players in the supply chain regarding the movement of the goods. The provisional release notification will be followed up with a final release notification. And that, Chairman, Chairperson, is in summary what has been this 57 days of toing and froing and meeting and consulting and trying to come to some sort of practical approach to the control bill between SAF and SARS. Very importantly, as SAF sees it, this does not result in the demise of City Deep.
Thank you. Any other follow-on? Not any other business.
The next question was in relation to the shipping lines and whether any response has been received from them. We have, in the last 57 days, made several attempts. Meetings have been held, and the response, in short, from the shipping lines is that they will be able to deliver in terms of the contract of carriage, and that is the essence of their response. And the issue of penalties raised by the Honourable Harris, the aspect of penalties has been, it still would be a contentious issue if had we not had this time to talk to SARS. This has been set out in the addendum which we'll be provided with relating to what sort of arrangement has been concluded with SARS. And the question as regards freight forwarders being happy but Bursa not, I'm going to refer you to my colleague Johan Marais.
I think specifically in terms of Honourable Harris, the shift came in that SARS realised that rather than be an impediment or obstructive in the seamless flow of traffic, however, managing risk had to be balanced with that consideration on the part of SARS. Now, in the prior bill, it read that you would clear goods within 3 days of arrival at that place, which is a port of entry, Durban, Cape Town, etc. That is significant. The vessel has already arrived. Now you have 3 days to clear. SARS then mentioned that they will only release the goods once the vessel arrives. So whilst we may have been in a position to process a declaration to SARS, we would not know the outcome or the status thereof until the goods had actually arrived in Durban. Now, to do any planning in a logistics chain, that is a hopeless situation. That is why we protested this vehemently at the time, because at the time it was a non-negotiable with SARS. That's how strong SARS felt in terms of the risk management. In our deliberations and consultation with SARS, option one was initially also issued along the same lines of you will only have release or know what to do with your cargo once the vessel has arrived. We have taken that, it's off the table. Totally off the table. We are now, and that is the trader as well, or the importer or exporter. We are now in a position where we can provide the necessary information by way of electronic messaging to SARS, and call it a customs declaration if you want. But that is a full set of data that we will introduce and that we are capable of introducing to SARS in advance. That means we will, as logisticians, have sufficient time to arrange the seamless flow of cargo, and particularly in this instance, the containers. We will know before the time what the status is. So we will move that particular container without other interventions in terms of the contact of carriage of the shipping line straight through to, in this instance, City D. There will be no reason not to move it, other than if it is out-and-out fraud, and in which instance we totally support SARS' move, detain that particular thing where it has attempted to enter the country. Yeah. So we as logisticians require certainty, and we feel that the concessions in understanding the supply chain that have been made on the part of SARS facilitates legitimate trade. As we sit here, we all of us owe it to ourselves, to as far as we are capable, not to allow illicit trade. And it is not that we as logisticians are looking to see where can we catch someone. We want freight to move seamlessly. We are probably as South Africa unique because we sit on this extremities in the south. And we have disagreed with SARS. And we've made a point of it to say that transit cargo in terms of a distribution hub or the gateway to Africa may possibly be disadvantaged in terms of the requirements of a so-called transit movement. We are very aware of this, and that will affect members within SACU and SADC. We are not shying away from that. So we would like to see that the transit movement, and as I'm reminded now to come down to earth quickly, a transit movement really means that South Africa is a gateway. Our northern neighbors and the SACU countries import through South Africa because it's considered to be convenient and a safe route. However, in the bills, there is a process which requires some form of introduction of information for SARS to assess. Now, in terms of all, as our colleagues have mentioned, there is the SAFE framework, which I think we've all got a better idea of now in terms of the World Customs Organization, and they promote that there should be not too many interferences in transit cargo. However, as my colleagues will also attest to, in terms of the SAFE framework and the World Trade Organization, there is always that little caveat there, subject to national legislation. And we must recognize that as a sovereign state, we have the right to do certain things. And if we have signed and agreed to the conventions, then we have certainly a moral duty to comply, but subject to our legislation.
I'd just like to add one point, which is that we need to emphasize this transition period in respect of the whole City Deep inland terminal issue. So it's not as though if it were passed into law that it would be with effect and that there would be a million teething problems that would need to be dealt with tomorrow, but it's certainly a 12-month period that we've agreed with SARS for trade and all interested parties to resolve any anomalies. There are other issues that are still on the table for discussion, such as the containerized pitch cargo. We spoke about that, where there's 10 people or entities, goods within one container, and the removals in transit that Johannes just referred to. So there are issues that still are on the table for discussion with SARS. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Can I just comment on some of the observations that have been made by SARS? There's an assumption from SARS' side relative to the seamless inland movement. Now, the seamless inland movement would depend on the ship's manifest being in place. And it gets back to the question we've all been asking, where is the customs border? And we, as I've said, believe the customs border is at the coast. Now, if the border is at the coast, international trade transactions will change hands at the coast. There will be no inland manifest to City Deep. There will be no inland seamless movement. Everything will be reconsigned. It will not be the customs releasing the box. It will be the shipping line releasing the box, which means that part of the shipping line's release procedure, of course, is customs clearance. But it also requires presentation of bills of lading, delivery instructions, and so on. At the moment, the shipping lines have a very good, efficient arrangement with Transnet relative to railway costs and so on. we maintain that this change will terminate all the manifests at the coast. And when the manifest terminates at the coast, everything will be reconciled. And it will have the effect that City Deep will be of no status at all, because everything will be moved from the coast inland. We haven't talked about exports. The same thing happens in exports. There will be no multimodal documentation from any inland port internationally. And I say this because we are involved with training in the international trading cycle, and we would know what teeth. For example, say to a South African exporter, you can send through to Detroit, Chicago, but your box may not go out of Norfolk. Depends whether the importer remembers to give a declaration or whether the customs at the port of Norfolk release the cargo. What's the exporter going to say? I don't want to know. I don't want any contingent or suspensive conditions on my contract of sale.
Thank you. I think, let me just say, in terms of process, clearly our interactions last year, towards the end of the year, and the space that we created for ourselves has not only given ample opportunity for stakeholders to interact with us. Judging from the presentations, it has also given the committee an opportunity to get a lot more clarity on the issue that you intended or you've always been raising. So I just want to say the presentations today will go a long way in ensuring that the committee applies its mind effectively when we process this bill. The next step that the committee will be taking is to get a report back by SARS, hopefully next week, as the program will dictate to us, and I think the committee secretary will confirm to members of the committee. And the committee will also then go into detailed discussions on its own before we adopt the report, or we adopt the report with amendments, whatever the committee will then come to. But I want to thank you very much for this very informative information that you have shared with us as committee members. On that score, committee members, honorable members, we have come to the end of our deliberations today, and I want to thank you very much for listening attentively and engaging with the submissions. With the dignity and the importance that they require. And all is not lost. I am sure that we'll find a common path to find a solution to this. Take into account that this bill has been towing and flowing, not for months, but for years. So I just want to leave that with you in your mind. Thank you very much.